What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another installment of Crime and Wine. How are you today?
My skin still hates me, but I'm okay.
Like my nose hate me.
We're getting to the tail end of my skin hating me because it hates me less.
You said it hates you less?
Yes.
Got it.
It hates me a lot less than it has in the recent week or so.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. My nose hate me. It's pissing me off.
Sorry to hear that.
I'm about to go get Joanne and cuss her ass out.
That means nothing to no one.
You're giving me this jacked up ass nose.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, what you sipping on today? God, dog it.
I have Raphael Riesling.
It's not sweet. Riesling is sweet to me.
This is a drier Riesling. It's a local one. But yeah, it's definitely drier. How can I explain this? Because it's like a potato, right?
A potato.
It'll make sense in a second.
I feel like Cleo.
On its own, it's kind of bland and whatever. But it can be used to make many a great things. Like this will be a good base for a sangria. But by itself, it's just kind of
Okay, I can understand that though.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all I can think of. I don't know. Hi.
That's where I felt like Cleo. Said cow. It's gonna be a cow up in there.
Listen, I'm hot.
Said, stop smoking weed. Well, when I'm drinking, I can't pronounce. I forgot what Siobhan said.
Oh, and I can't see it no more, so it's okay.
Mer something French. It's a Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
From Monterey Country. I'm mm-hmm. sorry, county, not country. I'll just put an R in there.
Oh, you just missing that word? Okay.
Well, I can't say mirror, what you say? Solar what?
Doesn't it have something to do with the sun?
Wasn't yeah. Like
Soleil in there?
Soleil. So mirror Soleil?
Okay.
That sound good. I don't speak French, though, so I hope I ain't butcher it.
I mean, I don't know that. I'm very high, so my grasp of language is a little off, but I don't know if that's could be French.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, when I was trying to look it up to try to find how to pronounce it, like everything, like French shit kept coming up. So I'm guessing.
I mean, it's a possibility. Again, I'm very high. So my grasp of language origins is a little slippery. So, you know.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about Mr. Livestrong himself.
Livestrong?
Mm-hmm.
As in
the yellow wristbands.
What the heck is his name again?
Lance Armstrong.
Girl, I know last name is Armstrong, but Neil just, I'm like, nigga, it's not Neil. That's the motherfucker on the moon. What is his name?
Yes, we are talking about Lance Armstrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, this is, so, y'all know sometimes when, you know, if the thing, sometimes these things come to me because of random Google searches, right? And it leads me down these odd pathways. This Google search started with a search of the United States Postal Service pension program.
I was about to say, how did you search this? Where did it start then?
It started because the United States Postal Service financial situation is quite interesting to me. Because it's unnecessary and totally created by the government because of their weird pension plan. So I was looking at that, which then reminded me that once upon a time, in my lifetime, they had a cycling team.
The post office?
Yeah.
My lifetime too?
Yes.
That's made up, girl.
which then led me to Lance Armstrong. So as you do not remember him being on the USPS cycling team. No,
I just remember the controversy.
Let's get there. Let's go through it. So he was born Lance Edward Gunderson.
I'm sorry, what was that last name?
Gunderson,
okay.
Yes. On September 18th,
1971. Got it.
He was born in Texas. His mother's name was Linda Gale. His daddy was Eddie Charles Gunderson. His dad died in 2012. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he's whatever. I don't care about his descent. He was named after a cowboy. It doesn't matter. He's white. It, whatever. Oh. But that's not even like racist. I'm not breaking down nobody's ethnicity. It does not matter. Understood. It doesn't mean shit to the story.
I get you. I understand, girl. I understand.
But he was named after Lance Retzel, who's a Cowboys wide receiver. His parents divorced when he was 2. The next year, his mother married Terry Armstrong, who adopted Lance that year, which is how he then became Armstrong instead of Gunderson.
I was about to say, that's a big-ass jump from name to name.
So, at the age of 12, he started swimming for the City of Plano Swim Club, and he finished 4th in a Texas State 1500-meter freestyle. But he stopped doing swimming only races after he saw a poster for a triathlon called the Iron Kids Triathlon, which he won when he was 13.
Okay, fancy.
Some people are just natural born athletes. It just be like that. It don't matter what they pick up, they can just do it. Like, some people are just like that. Not I, the cat. From 1987 to 1988, in the 1977-88 Tri-Fed Texas, Tri-Fed was the former name of the USA Triathlon.
Okay, that makes sense, okay.
So he was ranked the number one triathlete in the 19 and under group.
At what age? You said in what year? Sorry.
87 to 88. So it was 15? 16? 17? Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
I'm about to say like 13 or something. I'm like, damn, okay.
No. The second place athlete was Chan McRae, who became a U.S. Postal Service cycling teammate and the 2002 U.S. Pro National Champion. So these are like athletes, you know what I'm saying?
Athletes.
Yeah, like they out here. Armstrong total points in 1987 as an amateur were better than those of 5 professionals ranked higher than he was that year. At 16, he became a professional triathlete and became national sprint course triathlon champion in 1989 and 90 at 18 and 19, respectively.
He got that life.
Oh, yes. He started this athlete shit very early.
Clearly.
In 1992, he became a professional cyclist and started cycling for the Motorola cycling team.
Not Motorola.
The successor of the 7-Eleven team.
7-Eleven?
Listen, all the girls had a team. It was either a race car or a cycling team. The girls had the things. Mm-hmm. The 80s and 90s was a wild time when it comes to like what people were doing and shit. Like it was kind of wild.
When it comes to companies, it was.
In 1993, Armstrong won 10 one-day events and stage races. But his breakthrough victory was the World Road Race Championship in Norway.
The heck is a one-day event?
It's a one-day ride.
Oh, we talk about cycling. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, they're cycling.
I thought it was just like random ass.
Just pick up a ball and start doing some shit.
You're like, what does that even mean? It's like, got it. Makes sense. Okay, moving on.
Before his world championship win, he took his first win at the Tour de France in the stage from Chalon-sur-Marne to Verdun.
I was about to say, you took French, not me, girl.
I'm also very high. Again.
I took a little bit of Latin, that's it.
Language is, it's slippery at this point. He was 97th in the general classification when he retired after stage 12. Now, I don't know how much y'all know about the Tour de France.
Nothing.
But
I don't know a damn thing.
Let me just tell you how long it is, first off. So, hold on, let me get back to my spot. All right. So now, just real fast, tell you how long this is. Because it has like a wild amount of stages. So the Tour de France is an annual men's multiple stage bicycle race primarily held in France, while also occasionally passing through neighboring countries. Like the other Grand Tours, it consists of 21 stages, a stage a day over the course of 23 days, coinciding with the Bastille Day holiday. So you are biking for 23 days. Yes. So to win any stage of that,
23 days?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking like how long that's.
Because
that's the end of month of February.
You go, because it ends, well, it's not in February, because it ends at Bastille Day, but yeah.
Damn.
It's like, that's like May, June. So it's hot. Because let's see, that's May, because I went to Paris Bastille Day. I was in Paris on Bastille Day, that's May. Yeah, so that, yeah, it's warm in Paris in May.
It ain't warm, it's hot.
And it's a little humid. It's a little humid.
It's hot if you're riding somebody's bike. I wish I would have
all day
clothes on the damn bike with that hot ass helmet. Them got doggone pads, knee and elbow. And neck
shorts.
I'm not getting ready. And then I'm in an uncomfortable ass seat. You're gonna get two fat faps out of me and I'm gonna be out. I'm done.
That's why they spend the money on the bikes and the things and the, you know.
Get two fat fat. And Chanel finish.
Not fat fat, not on the
that's
internet.
That's it. Little two pedals. Boop, boop, and then that's it.
Say, you do fat fap on the internet, you end up somewhere else now. So he also won the Thrift Drug Triple Crown of Cycling, the Thrift Drug Classic in Pittsburgh, the Kmart West Virginia Classic, the Core States U.S. Pro National Championship in Philadelphia all that year.
Mm-mm.
He is alleged by other cyclists competing in the Core States road race to have bribed that cyclist so that he would not compete with Armstrong for the win.
What the hell?
1994, he won the Thrift Drug Classic and came second in the Tour DuPont in the United States. Because, yes, DuPont vacuums had their own tour for a while.
I know nothing of this.
I don't claim to be like a cycling expert, but I've definitely watched enough that I could follow it, you know? I would randomly do... For a couple of years in my life, I was randomly into cycling. Don't know where it came from. And it kind of left as fast as it came. It was a very... I got very interested in cycling for a while. It was around the time where I was gonna do like an AIDS bike across Canada.
Why?
I don't know. I'm really into biking. Mm. Weird face.
I ain't that into it.
I just couldn't get the time to go to do it, but yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to. So his successes in Europe occurred when he placed second in
That means you can't, you don't know what this word is, huh?
It's some races over there. Sorry. I mean, I don't want to butcher this. This is wild. I'm not even gonna try to say this. It ain't gonna sound like nothing of a human language. It's just weakness not even gone. Even play those games.
That's so. How I felt about the name of this. I just so happen to have some French ass wine, and now you can't talk about this French ass.
Even though 2 years before he had finished last place in that same event, mm-hmm. just to come back and win 2 years later. And he finished the year strong. Now, all this was 94.
Okay.
He finished the year strong at the World Championships in I need the phonetics pronunciation. Agrigento.
What is it?
It's Italian. It's in Sicily somewhere. Finishing in seventh place, less than a minute behind Luke LeBlanc, who won.
LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Is it Matt LeBlanc?
I said Luke.
Oh, not Matt.
No.
Oh.
I'm not gonna read the part yet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, it was a random part in there, but if I say it, it's gonna throw. It's. I mean, granted, everybody know how the story ends, but it makes a weird jump. So I'm not gonna say it.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, because you know when you be taking notes, sometimes you take them as you see them, not necessarily as you want them to be ordered when you do it fast.
Yes.
So there you go. So he won the Clásica de San Sebastián in 1995.
I would never be able to pronounce that.
Followed by an overall victory in the penultimate Tour de Pont. Told you, the language is very slippery. Words I say all the time are getting hard. Handful of stage victories in Europe, including a stage in the Tour de France. 3 days after the death of his teammate, Fabio Castorelli, who crashed on a descent in the 15th stage in one of the races, he pointed to the sky in honor of that teammate who died, because he died literally 3 days before during the race. So he like dedicated his win to him. He won a lot more through 96. We ain't got to go through each and every win, but he won a lot more through 96. In August of 96, he signed a 2-year, $2 million deal with a French cycling team.
Mm-hmm.
And he had two other people that joined him in signing, but then 2 months later in October of 1996, he was diagnosed with advanced testicular cancer.
I remember that. That happened, you said 96?
Yeah.
That happened that long?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was like 2000, 2001.
Nope.
Hey, okay.
October 2nd, 96, when he was 25, that's when he was diagnosed with stage 3 testicular cancer.
Mm.
The cancer had spread to his lymph nodes, lungs, brain, and abdomen.
I didn't know it was that bad. I actually thought it was isolated. I thought it was only in the testicles.
Oh, no, no, no.
Mm.
He found it because he went to his urologist for a diagnosis of his symptoms he was having, which were included headaches, blurred vision, coughing up blood, and swollen testicles.
Mm.
October 3rd, he had the surgery to remove the diseased testicle. When his doctor was asked in an interview what he thought Lance's chances of survival was, he said almost none.
Damn.
He said they initially told him it was a 20 to 50% chance, mainly to give him hope. But with the kind of cancer that he had, the x-rays, the blood tests, everything else, it was almost no hope. So it's like a miracle that not only he survived, but he survived this long.
Wow.
And to be able to go back to racing, because I mean, just think about how much that shit had spread by the time they found it.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't, like I said, I did not know it spread like that.
Yeah. So after he received the letter from an oncologist at Vanderbilt, he went to Indiana University Medical Center in Indianapolis and decided to receive the rest of his treatment there. The standard treatment for his cancer was a cocktail of drugs that, when you put them together, the initials are BEP. So the first chemo cycle that he underwent included the BEP, but for the three remaining cycles, he was given an alternative, which is called, it's a different drug cocktail. It's called VIP.
VIP, okay.
Yeah, there's like technical drug names, but there's no point. But the reason they switch them off is to avoid lung toxicity, because one of the drugs, the B and the BEP, can cause lung toxicity if you have too much.
Sheesh.
Yes.
It's like, damn, ain't no winning. Okay.
I mean, basically. But he did credit this with saving his cycling career.
It saved it. How? Because people felt sorry for him?
No, the drug cocktails, because those particular cocktails, people use them if they want to preserve muscles and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It doesn't, because like there's other chemo cocktails out there, but some of them really make your muscles very weak, or like they start to like atrophy and stuff like that. So if you are an athlete and you're trying to avoid those things, you would look for other treatments.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
So at Indiana University, Lawrence Einhorn had pioneered the use of cisplatin to treat testicular cancer, which is one of the things that he credited with saving his cycling career. So on October 25th, he had brain lesions
Shoot.
removed. Yeah. So his final chemotherapy treatment took place December 13th, 1996. In January of 1997, he unexpectedly appeared at the first training camp of the French team that
A
he had
month
gotten.
later.
Yeah, riding 100 kilometers with his new teammates before returning to the States. February of 97, he was declared cancer-free. In October, though, the French team announced that his contract would not be extended after negotiations broke down over a new deal. So that's when the US Postal team offered him a contract with a salary of $200,000 a year.
Which ain't bad back then.
No, not at all. By January 1998, Armstrong was engaged in serious training for racing, moving to Europe with the team. So, before his cancer treatment, he had participated in four Tour de France races, winning two stages. 93, he won eighth in the eighth stage. In 95, he took the 18th stage. He dropped out of the 96 tour after the fifth stage after becoming ill a few months before his diagnosis. So in 98, he started his kind of his post-cancer cycling comeback.
Yeah, this around the time that I started like
Knowing who he was.
hearing, yeah, because I've never been a sports person to follow any sports for real. So
This is
you had to be
around the
like
time.
big, big, big for me to know who you are.
This is around the time where this is like right before the Livestrong bracelets popped up everywhere. And this is when we were just kind of hearing about back to racing.
Now that you're saying all of that, I guess I just assumed all of the stuff that was happening was closer to the Livestrong thing, because the Livestrong stuff was decently big when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
And I went to seventh grade in 99, actually.
Yeah, the Livestrong was post cancer diagnosis, because that's what it was for.
Yes, I did know that. I just thought it was closer to like
to the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a whole career before we had any idea who he was.
I damn sure didn't know.
Well, before the mainstream had any idea who he was. People in the cycling world, knew, but you know how it is with, it's like you have your sport famous, and then you have like famous.
That's what I'm saying. You got to be famous for me to know who you are.
Yeah. So he entered the 1998 edition of the Paris-Nice, but he couldn't compete at that level at the time. So he abandoned the race. He then left Europe with his fiance, went back to Texas, where he thought about retiring. So he went into a seclusion near Beach Mountain in Boone, North Carolina, with a former Tour de France rider, with a couple of former riders and coaches, and just trained in the Appalachian Mountains so he can be prepared to go back to...
That's very specific to be in the Appalachian Mountains. You don't hear none about that. You only hear about the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, but the Appalachians are actually steeper.
That very well could be, but nobody care about the Appalachians.
But there's also... So the one thing on this side of the country people do, but it's because people do that...
People do what?
They, on this side of the country, people care about the Appalachian Mountains.
I'm basically on the same side as you. No, the hell they don't.
No, when you get all the way to the coast, but I'm about to tell you why. It's because there's a trail that people like to, people attempt to do, most people abandon, that goes from like about 1.5-2 hours north of here.
Okay.
All the way down into North Carolina.
Who? Why? Why?
People.
That just pissed me off.
People start it. Some people finish it. Most people don't. But
to me, it's just like trying to climb Mount Everest. Why? Why are we doing this?
I don't know. But there's like trails for riding through there. So that's another reason why he could have picked those mountains.
No. Everybody hear about the Rockies.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I hear more now that I'm coastal than I did before.
I guess it's true. I guess you didn't say, Chanel, you're not right.
No, I never once said that.
I'm going to bat.
In May of 98, Armstrong held his second charity race for cancer research in Austin, Texas, the Race for the Roses.
The Roses, okay.
Mm-hmm. There are some important cyclists there, including Greg LeMond. LeMond said it was a good reason to get cyclists together, went on to say that life doesn't always deal the cards out equally, and who knows if Armstrong will get back to the highest level. Maybe he retires this year.
I guess he showed him.
So then he went on to enter and win the Tour of Luxembourg. During the 1998 Vuelta a España, Armstrong shocked the cycling world by finishing in the top five during one ITT.
It is a lot of languages that I don't damn know that you keep saying. That sounds Spanish-y, was it?
Yeah.
We went from French to Italian to now Spanish. I'm lost.
He was the top 10 in the other, and you know, he kind of stayed with everybody. He finished fourth overall. His And then he kind of cemented the fact that he was back when he finished fourth in both the road race and the time trial at the World Championships. That was kind of his, like, letting people know, like, no, I'm back and I'm here to play, bitch.
You so, said fourth?
Yeah.
I mean, no, let's be straight up. Fourth, fifth, sixth, shit, last. Last place when it comes to professional, shit, you still doing that.
Yeah, really. That's the thing. It's like even a professional that's riding the bench is still better than 98% of the
population, period. Right.
So he did finish third in the voting for the Vail d'Or, which is a different race. And some of these, I know I'm pronouncing wrong. Again, the language is quite slippery. In 1999, he won the Tour de France, including four individual stages and the overall race. He beat the second place rider by 7 minutes and 37 seconds. However, Jan Ullrich was out due to an injury, and Marco Patania was out because of drug allegations, and those are his two biggest competitors, so he didn't feel like he, like, beat the best.
Oh, so wait, so he just kind of felt a way about it?
He was like, yeah, I won, but I didn't win against the best, so do it.
I ain't win. I just had confidence.
Yeah. It's like, I won, but I won against all the also-rans. I mean, that's how he was looking at them. Like, these niggas don't count. Like, it's...
I mean, although, as cocky as that sounds...
But it's like, you beat the next person by almost 8 minutes. I would say these niggas don't count, too.
Yes, I mean, it sounds cocky, but it's understandable. Like, if I put... Oh, this gonna sound fucked up. But if I put a high school basketball player up against a peewee basketball player, it's like, well, nigga, yeah, they won. I'm talking about that, they didn't. Okay. Like, how the hell did you get where you are?
So in 2000, both Ullrich and Patania returned to challenge Armstrong.
This was in what year?
2000. So this race began a 6-year rivalry between Ullrich and Armstrong, and ended in victory for Armstrong by 6 minutes and 2 seconds over Ullrich.
Damn, 6 minutes is a big ass. Were you really competition at this point?
I mean, listen. Armstrong took one stage in the 2000 tour, the second individual time trial on stage 19. And in 2001, he again won the Tour de France by beating Ullrich by 6 minutes and 44 seconds. In 2002, Ullrich didn't participate due to a suspension, and Armstrong won by 7 minutes over Josipa Bilaka. During stage 11 and 12 of this tour is when the race was won as the U.S. Postal. Because Robert Harris, who was the champion of a different race, he had led Armstrong up both climbs, breaking the peloton in the process. And then once he did that, so Armstrong could get through, that's when he won the stage. So it was considered a team win, not just him.
Okay, good. I said, okay, good, yes.
The pattern returned in 2003 when he took first place and Ullrich took second, but only 1 minute and 1 second separated them two by the end of the final day in Paris.
So this is the same person he initially beat by 6 minutes?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's a difference in, what was the time you said?
1 minute, 1 second.
Hmm.
The U.S. Postal won the team trial on stage 4 and stage 9. Armstrong nearly crashed out of the tour trying to defend one of the other teammates.
How you defend somebody on the bike?
Oh, it's a lot of defensive riding and stuff when it you know, through all that. So in 2004, Armstrong finished first, 6 minutes and 19 seconds again ahead of a German rider. Ulrich was fourth, an additional 2 minutes and 30 seconds behind Lance Armstrong. So now he's like 10 minutes behind.
Like, no lie, these numbers just don't make sense. Like, but how, like, these some big ass gaps and stuff. Like, I don't get
it. Well, it's when you're talking about the tours, it's total time. So it's time added across all the stages.
Yeah, but still.
Then not really, because it's like if you finish a minute behind in this stage, 15 seconds behind in this one, you know, and then add it all together. The gap is not like,
how many stages is it?
21.
So I don't know. I guess to me, I feel like competition would be, you said 21?
Yeah, because you get individual stage winners and then you get an overall. That's why they got to add your time. Because so it's like you may lose stage 1 through 5, but if you like dusting niggas the rest of the way, you can still win the whole tour.
I'm just thinking like, because even like a 30 second loss in a race is a huge loss. A big loss is a 10 second loss.
No, I agree. I agree, but you also, it's like 100 niggas on bikes out here too. So.
That's fine, but I just feel like the top one should be closer. Like, I don't know, I guess, I don't know. But then again, I don't watch the shit, so I don't know.
It's awesome, but it I get it. And if you're looking at individual races, it is. It's just when you get into adding total times, the gaps tend to look bigger. Because it's like this person was riding for 2 days, 15 minutes and 39 seconds. This person was riding for 2 days, 22 minutes.
10 seconds on 21 races is about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Total. That will make sense. 10? I don't get it.
You know, what is? Armstrong won a personal best 5 individual stages plus the team trial. He became the first biker since 1948 to win 3 consecutive mountain stages. And the individual time trial on stage 16 up a different mountain was won in style by Armstrong as he passed by Ivan Bezzo on the way, despite having set out 2 minutes after the Italian.
I'm sorry. So he had not a handicap.
A head start, yes.
Wait. So he did have a handicap.
Biker took off a full 2 minutes before, because much like a relay race, all the riders don't start at the same time. But instead of handing off where one stops and one starts, like they keep going, but all the riders don't start at the same time. They start in stages. So Lance Armstrong started 2 minutes behind that other guy and still beat him.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Cycling sound like a confusing ass sport.
You got it. It takes time to fully understand. It's even hard to explain. It's a hard sport to even explain to somebody, because depending on the race, it all kind of works a little bit differently.
See, I ain't got time for that.
Not like it's different, but it's not. If that makes sense. I don't know. Whatever. We ain't gotta get into all that.
You gotta go.
Yeah. But he won sprint finishes from Basso in stage 13 and 15 and made up a significant gap in the last 250 meters to Nip Clodin, which is another bikeler, at the line in stage 17. He won the final individual time trial to complete his personal record of stage wins. In 2005, he lost to David Zabrinsky in stage 1 time trial by 2 seconds, despite having passed Ulrich on the road. At this time, he was cycling for the Discovery Channel.
So no longer the post service?
Not with the Postal Service anymore. He's with the Discovery Channel now.
Okay.
Sorry. He is still with the Post Office. David Zabrinsky was with the Discovery Channel. Sorry. Notes are a little confusing. So the Discovery Channel team won the team trial. I remember their uniforms. I used to like their uniforms. They were black and had the like the earth on it and like the sun was coming over the earth.
Mm-mm.
They were cool uniforms. The old Discovery Channel logo. But Armstrong won the final individual time trial though. In the mountain stage, Armstrong, you know, led a bunch of attacks against Ivan Basso, but also Jan Ulrich, who was leading the T-Mobile team at the time.
T-Mobile?
Mm-hmm. So then, you know, blah, 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 more things. So we go to, now we're in the, like, all this is happening in the Tour de France. I just don't want to go stage by stage. This shit takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and July 24th, Lance Armstrong won his seventh consecutive tour. But when he crossed the line on the Champs-Élysées,
okay.
He finished 4 minutes and 40 seconds ahead of Basso, and Ulrich came in third. He also completed the tour at the highest pace in the race history. Because his average speed over the whole tour was 26 miles per hour, which is fast on a bike.
Hell yeah, I was only going 15 when I was on that damn little scooter thing and damn near died.
In 2005, Armstrong announced he would retire after the 2005 Tour de France, citing he decided to spend more time with his family and his foundation. During his retirement, he diverted his attention away from what was going on in cycling. But then in 2008, he saw somebody win one of the races that he had won before and felt the pain to get back into racing. So September 9th, 2008, he announced that he returned to pro cycling with the express goal of participating in the 2009 Tour de France. He reportedly didn't receive a salary or bonus and will post his internal tested blood test online. His internally tested blood results online. Because this was already after there was whispers that he was doping.
Yeah.
But
this is the kind of stuff I remember.
Nobody had confirmed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always
it just
was
whispers
for a while. So an Australian ABC radio reported on September 24, 2008 that Armstrong would compete in the UCI Tour Down Under in January 2009. UCI rules says that cyclists have to be in an anti-doping program for 6 months before an event, but UCI allowed Armstrong to compete anyway.
Oh my gosh, why?
He had retired from the 2009, a race in 2009. My tongue's not working enough to say all these foreign words. So,
why are they gonna still let him compete? That's effed up.
Because it's Lance Armstrong and he brought attention to racing.
I mean, I know why, but why?
I'm about to say, you know, money trumps rules. Come on, man.
I know why, but why? Like, come on.
So he had to retire from a race 2009 during the first stage after crashing in a rider pileup in Spain and breaking his collarbone. So he flew back. That,
I would be so pissed if I failed because your ass failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pissed.
I break my collarbone because you can't keep your bike up on this
2 weeks. Like, you rode a bike since you a fool.
Right. So he flew back to Texas, had a corrective surgery. It was successful. He was back training on a bicycle within 4 days of his operation.
Was the operation in because?
I mean, he got his collarbone fixed and then went right back to work.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it.
On April 10, 2009, a controversy emerged between the French anti-doping agency and Armstrong and his team managers, stemming from a March 17, 2009 encounter with the AFLD anti-doping official who visited Armstrong after a training ride. The official arrived, Armstrong claimed he asked and was granted permission to take a shower while his team manager checked the officer's credentials. In late April,
Wait, hold on, hold on. So these goofy individuals decided to make up lies, and both of them just happened to have to leave at the same time while said lie was said. You gotta think better than that. I'm going to check some damn credentials.
Casey.
Shower, cool. Check credentials.
Well, he was checking the credentials of the officer that was supposedly there to
No.
search his things and what have you.
No.
So, in late April, though, Armstrong was cleared of any wrongdoing.
Just like he was able to compete.
Yep, he returned to the race after his collarbone injury at the Tour of the Giulia in New Mexico on April 29th. July 7th, in the fourth stage of the 2009 Tour de France, he narrowly failed to win the yellow jersey after his team won the team trial. His team won the 39-kilometer lap, but Armstrong ended up just over 2/10 of a second outside of the first place's overall lead. He finished 2009 Tour de France in third place. He, yeah, whatever. In July 21st, 2009, he announced that he returned to the Tour de France in 2010. And Radio Shack was the main sponsor for his team then.
Radio show.
Yes. So he made his 2010 season debut at the Tour Down Under, where he finished 25th out of 127 riders who competed in the race. He made his European season debut at the 2010 Vuelta America, finishing in seventh place overall. He was also set to compete in several classics, but bouts with gastroenteritis forced his withdrawal from three of the four races. He returned to the States in mid-April to compete in the Tour of Giulia and May's Tour of California, both as preparation for the Tour de France. However, he crashed early in stage five of the Tour of California and had to withdraw from the race.
Fuck his collarbone up again.
No, it don't say what. I don't know what he messed up. He showed fine shape after recovering from the Tour of California crash, placing second in the Tour of Switzerland and third in the Tour of Luxembourg.
Okay.
June 28th, he announced via Twitter that the 2010 Tour de France would be his last one.
Didn't he retire before?
He did.
Okay.
He put on an impressive performance in the tour's prolonged time trial, finishing fourth. So in all eight of his tours since his comeback in 99, he always had good luck early in the tour, never got involved in any crash or anything like that. But in 2010, his luck ran out and he lost serious time due to the aftermath and Peloton splits caused by a crash on stage three. He rallied for stage 16, which was super hard. Was a like really, really, really hard stage. But he finished his last tour in 23rd place, 39 minutes and 20 seconds behind the winner.
39, 39.
Yes.
Yowza. See, I mean, no, I just don't like why. Why wasn't it big enough concern when his times be jumping like that? Why does that not cause like, what the hell going on over there?
So He announced his retirement from competitive cycling for good on February 16, 2011. Mm-hmm. Now, I did this very specifically, right? Because I wanted to go through the entire career because it was so much, so many names and stuff before getting into like what happened. So now let's get into what happened. For much of his career, he faced the allegations of doping. They have been saying it for a long time. He denied all allegations until January 2013, often claiming he never had any positive tests in the drug tests he had taken over his cycling career. He had been criticized for disagreements and you know, people were saying like he really is doping. They said that he threatened people. They said that he would ruin careers. This is a story here that was told by Christophe Basson. He was a writer for Festina at the time of the Festina affair and was widely reported by teammates being the only rider on the team not to be taking performance-enhancing drugs.
Dang, okay.
He wrote a number of articles for a French paper during the 1999 Tour de France, which made reference to doping in the peloton. Subsequently, Armstrong had Subsequently, Armstrong had an altercation with him during the 1999 Tour de France, where Basson says Armstrong rode up alongside on the Alpe de Huge stage to tell him it was a mistake to speak out about the way I do, and he asked why I was doing it. I told him that I'm thinking of the next generation of riders. He said, why don't you leave then?
Oh, you done went up and threatened him?
He riding a bike up a mountain and threatening the nigga. That's the wild shit when you think about it.
Say something else. Say something else. I dare you. How you gonna ride up on a bike and then threaten somebody? That's funny.
Armstrong confirmed the story.
That's funny. And
he also was on a national television station and said, his accusations aren't good for cycling, for his team, for me, for anybody. If he thinks cycling works like that, he's wrong and he'll be better off going home. He said the shit again.
That's funny. Like, yeah, I said it. They really don't give a damn. Mm-mm.
So there's other cyclists who call Armstrong the cancer in cycling, which was wild fucked up, right? Like,
that's messed up to you. I mean, granted, yes, that is a saying, but you could have thought of another one.
Right, given the situation.
Damn.
So he continues to deny the use of performance-enhancing drugs for 4 more years, describing himself as the most tested athlete in the world. From his return to cycling in 99 to the fall of from his return to cycling after his retirement in 2008 through March of 2009, he claimed to have submitted to 24 unannounced drug tests by various anti-doping authorities.
Hold on, wait a minute. Did he actually say I didn't do it, or did he just keep saying I never had a positive test?
He said both.
Because that's two different statements.
But he said both. He was also criticized for working with Michele Ferrari, who was a trainer and super controversial. You know, there's always a couple of those really controversial trainers whenever you talk about a sport, no matter what the sport is.
That is correct.
So Ferrari claimed that he was introduced to Lance by another cyclist. Greg LeMond described himself as devastated on hearing of them working together. And the Tour de France organizer said that I'm not happy to hear the two names are mixed. Ferrari was convicted, although it was later overturned, for sporting fraud and abuse of the medical profession.
What the heck is sporting fraud?
This is the thing about having charges in other countries, because it's like, is that a charge? Like, I'm sure it just,
I don't understand what it means.
I'm sure it's like it's like when it's like illegal gambling, like what the charges you would get in, like if you were like fixing games.
That's a charge?
You could, yeah, depending on.
Oh, hell no. Games. See, that's why Black people don't ever know what their charges are. We don't look at law books.
Because depending on what's happening, especially if they can prove that you're making money from it, it then becomes a RICO charge. It can become a RICO charge.
You'd be like, I didn't even know that was a law. Like, I know what I did, but what that stuff made me right there? What's that? Yeah. Right there?
that's the thing about having catch-all laws on the book.
Man.
You can, yeah. So Armstrong claimed he suspended his professional relationship with him, saying that he has zero tolerance for anyone convicted of using or facilitating the use of performance-enhancing drugs.
He was talking Ooh. Real big back then. He really was.
Bold.
Like,
the bold. He was. Color. That is what got me. He was like, I am Teflon, bitch. I'll do it and say what I want.
But like, to me, I just feel like, I mean, of damn of course. When you used to be able to do shit, like, you just have no stop.
Mm-hmm.
That is the wonderful world of money. When you got that money, you ain't got to stop.
Money and rules do not go together. So Ferrari was banned from practicing medicine with cyclists by the Italian Cycling Federation. But according to Italian law enforcement, Armstrong met with Ferrari as late as 2010 in a country outside of Italy. And the USADA reveals the intimate role played by Dr. Ferrari in masterminding Armstrong's Tour de France success. That sentence was so dramatic that I
was just, he making money off of it or something?
Yes, he got paid every time.
Oh, well, that would be why he was doing it then.
Armstrong paid Ferrari over $1 million from 1996 to 2006, countering Armstrong's claim that, huh?
That's only 10 years. That makes it sound like it was a long time and a lot of money.
Yeah, that's like, what, $10,000 a year or $100,000 a year? 100. Like that, it's like $100,000 a year. Which isn't not a lot.
I mean, I would take $100,000 a year, but it's not like worth this.
Yeah, like it's not a lot. It's a lot, but not a lot at the same time.
Right.
Like for somebody that's life changing, but it's also not like quit your job money.
Hell no.
Right. $1 million over 10 years is not, that's a salary.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Armstrong claimed that he had cut ties in 2004, records mm-hmm. show that he definitely did not. The report also includes numerous eyewitnesses accounts of Ferrari injecting Armstrong with the EPO, which is a performance enhancing drug, over a number of occasions. He was doing what was called blood doping.
Like a blood transfusion?
Yeah. To up the number of red blood cells in his body. Because it helps you process oxygen faster so you don't get as worn out as quickly.
See, were you talking to the wrong one? Because I don't do no needles. You ain't getting ready. I'm about to put some random ass blood in my body. But no.
No, it's your own.
We got to put the needle in my arm initially to get my blood?
They take it out, run it through this process, nope. And then put it back. But it, like, ups your red blood cells by, like, a crazy amount.
Nope. Not Latrice.
So 2004, there was a book about it. Bunch of people talked. about what was going on. Apparently, he did test positive in 1999, but one of his former doctors had backdated a prescription for cortisone because that cortisone, if you're taking cortisone shots, it could come up as positive for performance enhancing. It's like poppy seeds then doing a drug test, the same type of thing. So they backdated a cortisone prescription to cover up that he had a positive drug test.
These people, like, he is like the epitome of, like, this what happens, like, spoiled money, like, considered to have some form of notoriety, you know, that is like, oh my gosh.
So they basically gave him a backdated prescription for this cream that is approved by the cycling organizations because it's for what's called saddle sores.
Like on your ass.
And your inner thighs, you know, from being on the bike.
Heck yeah.
And it does have cortisone in it, but because it's approved, they're going to throw this test out, right? So they will always like predate prescriptions for that ointment. So they would have one for any random date in case he tested positive. And this that the that his main doctor was like, yeah, he didn't like have saddle sores. So
I don't see how he did shit.
yeah, some people do, some people don't. March 31st, 2005, there was a brief filed in Travis County District Court in Texas, as part of a legal battle following his termination in November 2004 as an employee of Lance Armstrong. He worked for Armstrong for 2 years as a personal assistant. In the brief, he claimed to have discovered a box of the performance enhancing drugs while cleaning his bathroom. And this particular drug that he had is not on the list of banned drugs, but it is one of those ones that do kind of beef up your performance, but it's just not on the list of banned drugs.
I understand.
Yeah.
So
So
it's a loophole.
basically, so then the assistant later had to go ahead and admit that he didn't have any direct knowledge that Lance was using performance enhancing drugs. So, you know, there's a bunch of. So basically, until 2000, like 2010, Lance Armstrong sued everybody that said he was using performance enhancing drugs. He sued papers, he sued book publishers, he sued everybody. So in 2012, the Times newspaper republished all of Wash's articles from the original article that he wrote about Lance, you know, just that initially talked about the doping and everything. And they said to, because Lance, they published the articles at first. Lance sued them for a bunch of money and got a settlement, and they pulled the articles. But then, when it was proven that he actually was doping, they republished them and then sued him back to recoup the money from Armstrong
That's funny.
in retaliation for the settlement and court costs.
It's like I'm rubber, you're glue.
Right. In December of 2012, the Sunday Times filed a suit against Lance Armstrong for $1.5 million. In that suit, the paper is seeking a return of the original settlement plus interest and the cost of defending the original case. And they ended up reaching an undisclosed settlement in August of 2013. Literally everything fell apart from him immediately. And then there's a bunch of stuff about like the different tests in 2005. It's like there was a bunch of tests. They just found out how people were like covering up for him, and then like all these different,
Recovering up for him.
Yeah, there was, yeah. So then we get to June 2006. A French newspaper claimed that during a deposition that Armstrong had admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs to his position just after brain surgery in 1996. This testimony was related to litigation between Armstrong and SCA Promotions, which is a Texas company that was attempting to withhold a $5 million bonus.
I'm sorry, 5 million for a bonus?
Yes.
That ain't even regular salary, huh?
No.
Okay.
This was settled out of court with SCA paying Armstrong and Tailwind Sports $7.5 million to cover the $5 million bonus plus interest and lawyer fees. The testimony stated, and so the doctor asked him a few questions, not many, and then one question he asked was, "Have you ever used any performance-enhancing drugs?" And Lance said, "Yes." Doctor asked, "What were they?" And Lance said, "Growth hormones, cortisone, EPO, steroids, and testosterone."
Damn.
Yeah.
Basically everything.
Armstrong suggested that the person making these claims may have been confused by possible mention of his post-operative treatments, which included steroids and EPO that were taken to counteract wasting and red blood cell destroying effects of chemotherapy. Nobody.
In all honesty, most things I bet that are considered performance-enhancing drugs, I can absolutely see being used in situations of cancer or lupus or, you know,
A
things
lot
like
of time, yeah.
that. Yeah, probably that makes sense.
So it kind of goes kind of deep into this SCA case. It's a There was a whole bunch of like testimonies. The thing about this is like with him, it's a lot of stuff that goes super deep into like individual cases, and it could take forever to go through every case that everybody that sued him. It was so much because he lost like $30 million in a day.
I did just see something to talk about Lance Armstrong and like how he was like, no, I didn't do anything. Then, all right, I did, but I didn't after this point. It was like,
Yeah, and then he went and did that weird ass interview with Oprah. And that Oprah interview was the strangest shit. I was just like, why would you? Okay. Like it was so much. Like
That's funny.
because then he when we got to the end of this lawsuit, February, because it was a lot of going back and forth with, because like SCA appealed the first judgment and all this other stuff. So when it was all said and done, February 4th, 2015, the arbitration panel decided 2-1 in SCA's favor and ordered Armstrong and Tailwind Sports to pay SCA $10 million. The panel's decision referred to was referred to another district court in Dallas for confirmation. They sided with SCA as well. Armstrong's attorney said that the panel's ruling was contrary to Texas law, and they said the court that would overturn it. The panel's decision said in part that Armstrong, that perjury must never be profitable, and it's almost certainly that the most devious sustained deception ever perpetrated in the world's sporting history. Yeah. So September 27, 2015, Armstrong and SCA agreed to a settlement. He issued a formal public apology and agreed to pay an undisclosed sum. So then we get to the federal stuff. Because
He was with the federal shit too.
remember, he was writing for the United States Post Office team.
I forgot about that. I had forgot
In
about that.
a series of emails in May of 2010, Floyd Landis, who was a teammate of his on the USPS team, admitted to doping and accused Armstrong and others of the same thing.
He just pissed me off. He a punk ass for that. How you gonna switch everybody else? The hell?
Based on Landa's allegations, the U.S. Justice Department's federal prosecutors led the investigation into possible crimes committed by Armstrong and the U.S. Postal Service cycling team.
Damn, okay.
The FDA and federal agent Jeff Novinsky were also involved in the investigation. So, February 3rd, 2012, the federal prosecutors officially dropped their criminal investigation with no charges. The case was closed with the closing of the case was announced without an explanation.
I bet.
U.S. attorney, and when Novinsky was asked to comment, he declined. February 23rd, a month after Armstrong, February 2013, sorry. A month after Armstrong admitted to doping, the Justice Department joined Landis' whistleblower lawsuit to recover government funding given to Armstrong's cycling team.
That's funny.
So Floyd Landis basically filed a whistleblower lawsuit against Lance Armstrong because he said Lance Armstrong ruined his career when he said, when he told about the doping. And the reason he told is because he wanted to come clean because he never wanted to do it. He felt pressured by Lance and the coaches to do so because everybody else on the team was doing it. So then the United States Postal Service and the federal government then joined the lawsuit saying that Lance Armstrong defrauded them by using performance-enhancing drugs.
Dang, so everybody, now everybody running.
So in June 2012, the United States Anti-Doping Agency accused Armstrong of doping and trafficking of drugs.
Damn.
Based on blood samples from 2009-2010 and testimonies from witnesses, including former teammates. He was also accused of pressuring teammates to take unauthorized performance-enhancing drugs as well. October 2012, he was formally charged with running a massive doping ring.
A whole ring?
Yep. It also sought to ban him from participating in sports sanctioned by the WADA for life. Armstrong chose not to appeal the fine, saying it would not be worth the toll on his family. As a result, he was stripped of all his achievements from August 1998 onward, including all 7 Tour de France titles. He also...
It don't be worth it. Like, what the hell? Why we got all the way here? Really? Yeah. That's what we did?
He also received a lifetime ban from all sports that follow the World Anti-Doping Code, as nearly all national and international sporting federations, including UCI, follow the World Anti-Doping Code. This effectively ended his competitive cycling career. The International Cycling Union also upheld the USADA's decision and decided that his strict wins would not be allocated to other riders. So just nobody won those 7 Tour de France.
I don't like that.
After years of public denial, in January 2013, he did that Oprah interview where he reversed course and made a limited confession to doping. While he admitted wrongdoing in the interview, he also said that it was absolutely not true that he was doping in 2009 or 2010. Mm-hmm. And he claimed the last time he crossed the line was in 2005. He also denied pressuring teammates into doping. September 2013, he was asked to testify about his doping, but he refused until and unless he could receive complete amnesty.
That's telling on yourself.
Which he was told is almost not ever gonna happen.
That, I mean, that's, I mean, I don't know. To me, that's like, I plead the fifth. Like, so you just told, we know what the answer is now.
So after the report came out, all of Armstrong's sponsors dropped him.
I bet they did.
He reportedly lost $75 million of sponsorships in one day. On May 28th, 2013, Nike announced it's cutting ties with Livestrong, which was his cancer organization. In the aftermath of the fall from grace, CNN article wrote that the epic downfall of cycling star, once an idolized icon of millions around the globe, stands out in the history of professional sports. In a 2015 interview with BBC News, which I remember watching this one, Armstrong stated that if it was still 1995, he would probably do it again.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and I was like, nigga, what?
He don't care. He has shown this entire time that he doesn't care. Mm-mm. He'd be like, nigga, I'm gonna do what the fuck I wanna do. Like, I don't care what y'all saying. I don't care what y'all talking about.
So I think the last part is just like a real quick looking at the, because the whistleblower lawsuit took 8 years. Because Landis, because he won the 2006 Tour de France, but it was stripped after he admitted to doping. Like, he had a positive doping test and got banned or suspended and, you know, all of that. So he sent a bunch of emails off to literally everybody who would care, detailing his use of the performance enhancing drugs, the other riders, the cycling official. He literally said, this is what I did, this is everybody who did it with me, this is everybody who helped us, these people who gave it to us, this is where we got it from, this is what we did today, these are the things.
You don't give a shit.
So then he filed a federal whistleblower lawsuit against Armstrong under the Federal False Claims Act. The False Claims Act allows citizens to sue on behalf of the government alleging the government had been defrauded.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yep.
Ain't nobody, don't nobody care that much to be like, I'll do it for you. Like, really?
You do if you get the money from it.
That's corny.
The existence of the lawsuit was first revealed by the Wall Street Journal in 2010. In the lawsuit, Landis alleged that Armstrong and team managers defrauded the U.S. government when they accepted money from the United States Postal Service. In January 2013, U.S. Justice Department officials recommended joining the federal lawsuit aimed at clawing back money from Armstrong. So in February, the U.S. Department of Justice joined the whistleblower lawsuit, which also accused the former team director, Johan Bruneau, and Tailwind Sports, the firm that managed the team, of defrauding the U.S. as well. So they, you know, it's getting to the documents, whatever, whatever. June of 2014, Armstrong put in a request to have the suit dropped. And they was like, no, girl. They said the court denies without prejudice that the defendant's motion to dismiss the government's actions as time barred. So February 2017, the court determined that the federal government's $100 million civil lawsuit against Armstrong, started by Landis, would go to trial. The matter was settled in April of 2018 when Armstrong agreed to pay the U.S. government $5 million. During proceedings, it was revealed that the U.S. Postal Service had paid $31 million in sponsorship to Armstrong and Tailwind Sports between 2001 and 2004.
$31 million in 3 years?
Yep. Shit. The Department of Justice accused Armstrong of violating his contract with the USPS and committing fraud when he denied using performance-enhancing drugs. It was reported that Landis would receive $1.1 million as a result of his whistleblower actions. So in November of 2013, Armstrong settled a lawsuit with Acceptance Insurance Company. AIC had sought to recover $3 million and had paid Armstrong as bonuses for winning the Tour de France from 1999 to 2001. The suit was settled for an undisclosed sum one day before Armstrong was scheduled to give a deposition under oath.
Oh, gosh.
So as of now, he owns a ranch in Texas and, you know, he's married, he has kids.
He's trying to live a quote-unquote regular life after all the chaos he has caused.
Mm-hmm. He, in July of 2005, he had hinted at running for governor of Texas.
Oh, gosh.
He said, but not in 2006, because he's friends with George Bush. Yeah. Oof. 2000, you know, he went back and forth about running for...
He did a lot. Like, that. The thing that just kept getting me about him, he was very... He's just, like, bold as hell. Just be like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna do what the hell I want to do. Like, F y'all, I don't care what y'all talk about. Or just be like, yeah, I said it, and...
So, now, he owns a coffee shop in downtown Austin.
He ain't never there.
I mean, he might be.
He ain't there.
It's his, the coffee shop is named Juan Pelote Cafe. The name is a joking reference to his testicular cancer, with the name Juan being considered by some a homophone for one, and Pelote being Spanish for ball.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He also owns and operates a bike shop.
Of course he does.
In Austin. I mean, he's just kind of out here living his regular life, I guess. he bought an early stake in Uber.
Oh, he got money now.
So in 2009, Armstrong invested $100,000 into venture capital firm Lowercase Capital, which subsequently bought an early stake in Uber, among other investments. In 2019, Uber achieved an IPO of $82 billion and earned Armstrong an estimated $20 to $30
million. Yeah, that makes sense.
According to CNBC, Armstrong said it saved their family.
I bet the hell it did.
Yeah. So Lance Armstrong, he did all that, but now he just out here living his regular life. He's like 50 years old now, which is kind of wild when you like listen to all of that, because he's only like 50.
He had to get his stuff done early. He ain't got no time.
It's like, that's very wild when you think about it, because again, he's 50. Like, he's lived like five lives. Like, his.
No, because he ain't got the time. He here for a good time, not a long time.
Not a long time. My nigga said, I'm doing everything early so I can sit the hell down in my senior years.
Like, oh, so that's what you're doing? I did that.
Now I am relaxing. But before this moment, I was wilding. You see? Difference. I have grown. I have progressed. I am now owning my coffee shop with my bike shop connected.
It probably is connected too.
It's if it's not, it's very close. And I'm gonna run my one ball coffee and this Mellow Johnny.
Mellow Johnny.
That was the name of the bike shop, Mellow Johnny's.
Oh. All right, y'all. Well, thank you so much for listening to us ramble about Lance Armstrong. Live strong, the yellow bracelets around 2000, 2001.
Kind of want one. I don't know.
It was like for like 5 years, running. Like,
yeah, I kind of want one now.
But yeah, thank you so much.
But I kind of want one now.
Thank you so much for listening to us. We'll be back. There's I'm gonna say it. There's a chance we may skip next week. The both of us are traveling. But we're gonna
Yes,
make
I have. Yes, I will be out of the country.
Yeah. So we will skip next week.
But we have two this week because we still love you.
Yeah, we will be back the week after, though. Yeah. Right. And on that note, peace out, guys.
Bye.